Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Telling Everybody Everything. Loads going on this week, including some personal neighborhood pettiness from me. So that's really exciting because often I don't get much of a social life, so nothing that interesting happens and I just have to keep coming on here every week and talking about my kids. Not this week. I got into a bit of a, well, let's call it a British tussle with someone from down the road. But first, huge worldwide controversy as famous conjoined twins, Abby and Brittany Hensel. I mean, I've known who they were for a really long time. From childhood, there's been a fascination with how they're conjoined and how they live their lives. They're really inspiring young women. Biologically, I suppose what's going on is they have two arms and one twin controls each arm, and they have two legs and one twin controls each leg. They have a shared circulatory system. They have two hearts, and they had surgery when they were young to kind of widen their chest cavity to make it easier for them to breathe. They have one liver, but I think they have three kidneys, and they have some other double organs. And there was also a third arm that was removed when they were babies that was sort of in the back, it just to make it easier for them to move around. It was all like groundbreaking medical research and a really interesting story. And their parents were very happy for them to appear on programs and talk about it. And they've always seemed mentally very robust, very grounded. One, Abby, is the taller twin. Her head tilts like 5 degrees to one side. And then Brittany is 15 degrees to the other side. She's smaller. I think the Abby's growth was halted at some point because Brittany stopped growing prematurely. And they've talked about all these things, and this is why I know them. I don't know if there was a huge fascination with them in the UK, the same that there was in North America. But people loved them. Great girls. I think they even had a few docuseries or even a reality show for a time. But for some reason, you know, they've always been twins that I have admired and known about, and I love full disclosure. I just love how they talk about their lives. Great, great, great. They're very active on social media. Wonderful girls. Young women now, because this is the thing. Girls, like children from my youth, have now grown up and are young women, and I think they're about 30 now. One of the twins has gotten married to a man, and it's tricky when any young woman in the public eye becomes a sexual being or gets in a romantic relationship or reaches a certain age where the fascination becomes about that and people's boundaries are all over the place. Adding to that, the fact that we speak about disability a lot differently now. We're not so uncouth. And I would consider these young women, you know, I don't know if they identify as being disabled or not, but the fact that they need to make certain allowances physically to be able to do the same things as other people. You know, they've had multiple surgeries and one leg is shorter than the other. Like I would assume that they should be considered at least a little bit delicate in terms of what they can do and where, I don't know. At some point, definitely they were. And there's so much ableism in the world now that I didn't even realize for a very long time. And it's recently revealed itself to me. I was like, oh, wow, no, the whole world is so deeply ableist. Like even when you park in a wheelchair space, more on parking later, then there's a curb there, and a lot of wheelchairs, you can't even get it up that curb, and loads of restaurants and places of business say that they're wheelchair accessible, but they're not, and you can't get to the bathroom, and all these problems. And also, we speak about people with a disability in a different way, and it's harder for them to get into the workforce, and they're treated differently, yada, 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 and this is a problem. And now we've reached this place where we want to ask questions. We want to talk about, okay, what happens when one conjoined twin is in a romantic, intimate relationship with a man? What's the other sister doing? I remember there were other conjoined twins who were adult women when I was young in North America, and they were asked a lot of the same questions. And they would say, well, the other one just looks away. I go on dates. Yeah, my other sister just like reads a book or isn't in the mix. And I think to ABs, which is like, what I think a lot of the disabled community would call able-bodied people or people who are non-conjoined, we wouldn't be able to imagine doing that. Like, well, what are you saying? You just read a book while like your sister's getting fingered? Yeah. Oh, here comes Bobby because we have a financial call in a minute. I shouldn't be on this call. I don't understand what they're talking about anyway. I know a lot of feminists will be listening and be like, Catherine, what do you mean you have a financial call? Be on the call. I will be on the call, but it's boring. But these sisters have had to separate themselves mentally, presumably their whole lives. When one sister wants to do something, one's not interested. I think probably they're very practiced in like shutting down and letting the other sister have her privacy. Now, I spoke about the biology, and I've done a little deep dive into this because my girlfriends from home were asking. Not that it's any of my business, but they do have a shared large intestine and anus. And they have one wide pelvis and they have one vagina. Yeah. Luckily, these twins, as I said, are all about full disclosure. So they've gone on Instagram this morning and said, for those of you asking, actually, this is Abby who posted it. She goes, for anyone asking, yes, I go down on my husband. Yes, my sister is there. Well, obviously she's there. Like her face is like 15 degrees tilted away from your face. Yes, I have sex with my husband. Yes, my sister and I orgasm as one. But when I'm sleeping with my husband, my sister listens to a true crime podcast or reads a book and puts the pleasure out of her mind. That's a lot like many marriages, actually. So is it your sister who's married to this dude? I know a lot of women who are reading magazines or thinking about their list of chores for the next day while they're having sex. So it's really not that weird. The sister really is his wife when you think about it, and you're his girlfriend. You're the one actively fucking him and sucking him off, and your sister's like, oh, this again. Just sort of daydreaming about true crime. True crime podcast. Wait a minute. How about the one where my sister was sucking off her husband right next to my face, and so I decided to kill them both and live the rest of my life with a dead sister hanging off my left side? How about that true crime podcast still to come? I don't think that I could take it. Being a conjoined twin. I love that these sisters are happy to answer all of the burning questions that are absolutely none of anyone's business. But it is wild to me. And then it brings up other questions about consent. Like, okay, there have been situations where non-conjoined twins, just like an autonomous one person, has not wanted to have sex. And they've checked out. And they've been like mentally damaged by that. They're like, oh, you know, I just go cold and I don't think about what's happening. All right, well, that's going to catch up with you, isn't it? Like, it is still her vagina. And what if one of the twins wants to have a baby? What if Abby and her husband want to have a baby and Brittany doesn't want to? Well, they have a shared pelvis. And also, the kids are going to be around Brittany. Like, she can't exactly just take herself to Miami. It is such a complicated situation and such a unique situation. And this is why people are curious. And I think that it's great that we can have conversations about it without being canceled, because it is quite touchy territory. It's like loads of red flags about disability and consent and sex and all this stuff, but they're more than happy to talk about it. But what's going on with this guy? I saw, you know, because now he's very famous, they've tried in the tabloids to do like deep dives on him. And I read that he has some outstanding child support issues from a previous relationship. But I mean, that's all I know about him. What if you don't like the other twin? Like, there are loads of marriages where the sister is annoying or the mother-in-law is always around. Like, this sister is always around. So whatever harmonious life they're living, I don't know how they do it. And then what if Brittany meets someone? But how's she going to meet someone? Because now she's in a marriage. So presumably, Abby and Brittany were like going out, doing things with their girlfriends, like perhaps going to bars, like meeting people. And then Abby met someone first. And what, now Brittany has to go to Bed Bath & Beyond every Saturday and like potentially be pregnant with her sister's pregnancy. It's a lot. Is this a big story in the UK? BK, have you heard about this?
No,
Bobby's just researching for the next football season or like his fantasy football league. When does that start?
Oh, September.
September. What a loser. Oh, actually, if they have one set of reproductive organs, which is what I read in their Wikipedia, then that means one set of ovaries, but you have two ovaries. So presumably, do they take ownership over each ovary, like, okay, the left ovary is mine and the right ovary is yours? Because when you have a pregnancy, a sonographer can tell which ovary the egg came from because it forms this thing that I forget what it's called. It's the thing that then releases progesterone for the rest of your pregnancy. It does something. I forget what it's called. But anyway, you can see on a sonogram which ovary your egg came from when you're pregnant. But if they're conjoined twins, then surely they are identical twins, which means they are from the same egg and they would have identical DNA anyway. So genetically, do you know what I'm saying? Genetically, with regards to whose ovary it came from, even if they had separate reproductive organs, even if they were separated and they weren't conjoined at all, they would have indistinguishable DNA. They would have the same, like their kids would, in a paternity test, a maternal, whatever it's called, in a genetic test, there's no difference between identical twins' kids. You can do a paternity test with like two identical twin dads, for example, and be like, he's the father, he's not the father. Like your child would also have your brother's same DNA because you have your brother's same DNA because you came from the same egg. Does this make sense to anyone but me? I just feel like someone needs to advocate for Brittany. Every Brittany on earth needs me to advocate for them right now, as that's what it feels like to me. Because I know that these girls are wonderful. These women now are a wonderful example of on-the-spot conflict resolution and cooperation. Like when they drive, one controls one arm, one controls the other arm. And I've watched them in YouTube videos, and it's called Sharing a Life with My Sister, this documentary on YouTube that they made. And they were so articulate. And they were like, we want to make this so people know about us. They stopped taking pictures. And they still live in their small town in Minnesota where they were born. Well, probably not now, but then at the time of the documentary. And you'd watch them in class interacting with their many friends, and they would dance really coordinated. And they would even reach for their pencil case where one has to hold on to the case and the other has to zip. They would do that so coordinated. They almost have this just instinctive coordination. They cracked their knuckles. So one hand, during the middle of an English exam, took the other hand and cracked the knuckles. Well, how would your sister know that you needed your knuckles to be cracked and move her hand? Like, you know, they're amazing what they've achieved. And I don't know why we only started talking about romantic relationships now that there's a marriage, because presumably the girls were dating before. But it just feels like, oh God, if my sister gets married and I don't want to get married and I want to be single and I don't want to have kids, or I do want to have kids, but I haven't met the person yet, but now I'm involved in like going to soft play with your kids and dealing with their bullshit. Like if the baby cries in the middle of the night, Abby can't just get up and deal with the baby. Brittany also is, unless she sleeps like a rock, and she's got an eye mask on, and Abby's like dragging around her left side to get to the, like, this is a huge sacrifice for Brittany. Is Brittany being bullied? Is anyone advocating for Brittany? Did Brittany, I'm assuming, have a say, like, all right, fine, you marry this guy, cool. They just have this mutual understanding, I guess. But damn it, like, God, to live with a man, to live with a fucking, especially this man, he's like big and has a beard and he seems like he probably snores and he sweats when he sleeps and he has like sleep apnea. I'm just assuming. To live with a man and to sleep in his bed when you don't love him and your fucking sister is married to him, like, forget it. Forget it. Or she loves him too. And she's like, I'm happy to like be inches away from this guy's balls and penis. You know, I'm making jokes adjacent to what's going on. It's not at all at the expense of these young women. You know what? I would love to sit down and interview them, just like girl talk, woman to woman, and be like, how is this going? How is it working? Because I'm telling you now, I love my sister Carrie and I approve of her husband, Alan. I think he's fun. He's funny. He's a great dancer. He's an excellent chef. Would I want to be next to his... All right, look. People listen to this podcast with their children in the car. So don't... Like, earmuffs for this next bit. But would I love my sister enough to be just next to her husband's penis as he ejaculated into her mouth? No, I don't. I do not love her enough to do that. So kudos to these sisters, but no, 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 not for me. Okay, moving on from that. Whew. Thank you for always writing me letters, by the way. Joanne told me that, because Joanne curates the emails often, she said there were loads of letters asking what you decided to do about Fred's tonsils. People are really invested because there are trends in healthcare even, and seasons of doing things. For example, I've spoken before about how in North America, baby boys are routinely circumcised. It's not a religious thing. It's just growing up, you would get made fun of in the showers and gym class if you were uncircumcised because the overriding trend was to circumcise baby boys. And I think that the rhetoric was it's cleaner, it's healthier, blah, 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 whatever. Bobby is circumcised. And when we had Fred, I made it super clear that I'm vehemently against circumcision. Does this mean I'm anti-Semitic? No. Does it mean that I don't like my husband's penis? Like, I love it. But to do a surgical procedure on an infant for like aesthetic purposes or religious purposes or whatever, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I am very anti-circumcision. But Bobby and I both had tubes put in our ears when we were babies, because we had a lot of ear infections. And when we speak to people from our town, like everyone had tubes put in their ears, which is a surgical procedure to drain fluid from the middle ear. And he had burst eardrum. I had a burst eardrum at one point, I think. Ears were like a hot thing. And then tonsils. People my age who had tonsillitis, strep throat, infections, we just routinely had our tonsils out. Now, my mom waited a while to take mine out. She waited a while to take Joanne's out. And I think Joanne had implications from that. She had sinus infections as an adult. Her palate and her mouth developed differently. She needed special orthodontics that we didn't need because her tonsils were so big. They were depressing her tongue, like blah, blah, blah. So there are instances where you do need to have them out. But what we're not doing now, even in North America, is routinely circumcising little boys. The trend is shifting. And we're also not removing tonsils, because we've realized that they serve an immune function and they're an organ for a reason. But we want to get Fred's out. As soon as we got back from the ear, nose, and throat specialist, who took a very conservative approach, he was like, nah, you know, we'll just watch him. He's not as bad as I've seen some. Some kids just have infection after infection. They have sleep apnea. It's like horrible, and we need to take them out. Fred's not there yet. I thought, great. And then I came home and Fred immediately got a throat infection. And you wouldn't believe the look of his tonsils. They're like huge, touching in the middle with white spots on them and like red capillaries that you can see. Like it was awful and he's still sick. And the kids this week, I've been up with them like some nights 30 times. 30 times, because Fenn is now sick too. Though now that we have two, we look at Fenn and we look at Fred and we go, no, Fenn is a bit sick. Fred's like crazy sick. And as soon as he coughs, he vomits, he's always had reflux, he's always feels like something's stuck in his throat. You know what I mean? So yes, so now I'm pushing, and the doctor's been on Easter holidays, he's back in the office today, I'm gonna be like, I could show up to your doorstep at 3 p.m., we're taking these tonsils out. Though, thanks to this podcast and thanks to you writing into me, we're just gonna reduce them, I think. So the technology used to be to cut them out with a knife when our parents were young. And then when we were young, they would take them out with heat, like laser them off, kind of cauterize them. And now the technology is to use cold somehow to like freeze them out. And you can do a tonsil reduction. So you don't completely remove the organ, you just make it smaller. And I also want his adenoids taken out, which are this other organ kind of in the nose slash throat that they get bigger at this age and then they get smaller. But anyway, I want them out. Out. Off with their heads, she said. So I don't know why. I guess a lot of you are navigating the same things. You have toddlers and you're like, what are you going to do with the tonsils? What am I going to do with the tonsils? I'm taking them the fuck out, reducing them. Adenoids out. Tonsils smaller. And that's controversial. You can think of it what you will. I have three children and I can tell you that Fred is my sickest by a mile. And he's a singer and he's a performer now and an orator. And I can hear that something, I just know something's in his throat. He needs them out. So that's what I'm doing next. I got into a fracas yesterday with someone in the neighborhood. My good friend Emily Dean has a wonderful podcast available on Acast and wherever you get your podcasts called Walking the Dog. Emily Dean has a book about grief called Everyone Died, So I Got a Dog. Her dog Ray Ray is actually Megan's biological brother. My dog Megan and Ray are brother and sister, and Megan and Emily and I have been friends for a very long time. She is fucking hilarious. She used to be some type of editor at InStyle, sub-editor maybe, I forget her exact role. She's fashionable, she's fabulous, she's over 40, child-free, she has tasteful interiors. She's everything you could want from a pal. So follow Emily Rebecca Dean on Instagram and listen to her Walking the Dog podcast, where she goes out with many different creatives, celebs, whatever, and has a little chat whilst walking their dogs. So Emily and I did that yesterday. We pulled up to a clearing on a public road yesterday, and we were going to record the podcast there with Megan and Ray. A man came out of his home, and he said, oh, you can't park here because the family who are coming back soon, they'll need this parking space. And I looked around, and I thought to myself, huh. I said, well, it's a public road. It should be signposted if I can't park here. And he's like, oh, yeah, but you know, they're coming back soon, so you can't park here. And I was just like, ugh. And I had a moment where I thought to myself, Catherine, how petty do you want to be today? This man does not own the road. You pay a buttload of tax to be able to use public roads that are not fixed. They're full of potholes. So you might as well get your money's worth and just park on a public road whenever you want. What this guy doesn't know about me is I will even park where I'm not allowed to park and I will get a ticket. That's the kind of woman that I am. But I didn't want to fuck with his day. Like I could tell that it meant everything to this man that I not park in front of the house. Parking is so important to the people of the UK. And I used to live in a church conversion in Crouch End that I've spoken about before, where there is a tiny parking lot that is allocated to the residents of that building, but there aren't any official signs and you won't get a ticket if you park there. So it's down to them to police it themselves. Holy shit, they have a flaming hot group chat about policing this lot. Like it's ruined their lives. All they do is like curtain twitch and be like, oh, someone from down the road's parked in our allocated little parking zone. And what are you going to do about that? Well, we'll put bins there. We'll put wheelie bins. We'll put cones. I'll park my car over there so no one else can park. Like, I love you guys. I know people from the church listen to my podcast. And I used to be on the group chat and I got off because it was too rich for my blood. But you are wasting your lives. All right? British people are wasting their lives getting in a tiz about parking. So this guy was like, no, you can't park here, whatever. I said, I'll move. I said, you must be exhausted though, coming out here all day telling people they can't park in an unposted public road. And he's like, well, people don't do it very often. I was like, great. So then what the fuck is your problem? Like if people only do it once in a while, then just let it happen. But whatever, I was only going to be an hour, but I moved. There were other spaces. This is the other thing. Like if someone from the house is coming and it's a dead end, like little cul-de-sac road where nobody ever parks, well, then they can park in all the other parking spaces until I'm gone. What do you think? I'm going to spend my life in this clearing? No, I'm taking the dog for a walk with my friend Emily, and then I'm going to leave. And then be a gentleman and like move the car into the spot that you want. Like it's just not worth it. Like this guy could be in 1,000 other places, but he's chosen to like take a leave of absence from his career or whatever he's doing to like sit and look out the window and make sure nobody parks in the spot. So I just moved. I was like, Catherine, you have many gifts in your life. Like, don't ruin this guy's day by digging your heels in. And as soon as I posted about that on Instagram, because I am petty and it was so stupid, like, I don't care where I park, but I am committed to justice. And so things like this irk me. It irks me that someone wants to take ownership of a public road. Like, you knew when you bought the house that there wasn't a driveway. If you want a designated parking space, build a driveway in your like front area. Don't try to police the road and act like you own a public road and you can determine who parks there. That just bothers me. Like, just the principle of it bothers me, but not enough to dig my heels in and stay. So I moved, I put it on Instagram, and he messaged me. And I'm sorry if you're listening, because I'm not messaging you back. I'm not completely un-British. I'm horrified that you messaged me. And he said, wait, I'll read you his message. He said, I'm really sorry you felt, dude. Has no woman in your life ever taught you, I'm really sorry you felt is not an apology? I'm really sorry you felt I was being petty about you parking in front of my family's house. I realize it's a public road. Oh, what's that? I realize it's a public road. So the message should have ended there. I realize it's a public road, full stop. But he continues, I realize it's a public road and the residents of this street have been up in arms with the local council about signposting no parking down this dead end street. Even the residents have to fight for space. So I apologize if I came off rude or petty, but it's been an ongoing struggle down the street about parking for a very long time. And then another message, Catherine, I really do apologize if you felt I was being rude today. Parking down the street has been an ongoing issue and I guess I didn't explain the whole situation. So I'm sorry I came off as a little rude. The council won't put signs up because you aren't entitled to no parking on that street. Because as you said in your earlier message, it's a public road. So no, your beef isn't with people then who want to park on the public road. Your beef is with the council. And unless and until they grant you, residents, the signs that you're asking for, I am sorry to be the bearer of bad news. Anybody can park on the public road. And they're not going to give you the signs, by the way. They're not going to do it for you because, like you said in your message, it's a public road. God, this poor guy. These poor residents. And I know exactly what they're going through because the people in my church WhatsApp are exactly the same. They're like, wow, there are people parking with us. Like, it means everything to British people. And as soon as I posted this on Instagram, I received a flood of messages from people who are like, I have had my tires slashed. I have had a man come out of his house and open my car door and tell me I had to leave. I have had a guy come down and scream in my face and tell me I've had to leave. Like, cars have been damaged. Like, this is a problem. The infrastructure in Britain, and you're lucky that I'm here with my background in urban and regional planning. In Canada, if you lived in a residential neighborhood, you would have a driveway. End of. And you would probably have a double garage. End of. But here in the UK, because your country is old as shit and it's a small, small island, there isn't space for that. Your homes were built in the 1600s when you didn't need a driveway because there weren't any cars. You would tie your horse up and then you'd like go work at the cheese mill or wherever the hell, like go be a blacksmith. And you would come home and there weren't these fights because everyone was just busy dying of the plague. And now you live in these same houses, but you drive Range Rovers around and you're like, oh, well, I am entitled to park it somewhere, but there's no space. That isn't my problem. It is a issue with infrastructure. And what you need to do is move to Canada. Go back to where I came from or accept your fate. I'm sorry. Like, guess what? I used to live in a flat too. I used to have parking problems too. When I'd have visitors come and there was nowhere for them to, I get it. But I understood what I bought into because I was like, oh, I live in a flat. I don't have a driveway. So it's every man for himself. Let me say this. If he had come to me and said, listen, hi, I can see that you're about to walk your dog. I understand that I don't have a driveway, that I live on a public road, and you are completely within your rights to park here as a taxpayer and a vehicle owner. But it would really make my day if you could park down there instead. Even give me your keys, I'll move your car. Because my mother or my wife or someone's about to come home and I really want them to have this spot outside my house. It's petty. It's stupid. I'm not entitled to the spot legally, but I would love to have the spot. I would have been like, Oh, bro, I can't wait to move for you. Thank you for your honesty. People can't be honest in this country, and that is your downfall. You have to get all like jobs where they're like, well, you can't park here. Yes, I can. You don't want me to park there. So say that, and I will respect your honesty, and I will move. I will park in a different street if you just don't like my car. I'll do whatever you want if you're honest with me. So this guy, I know he follows me on social media because he was very apologetic instantly. And I feel so bad that I have now talked about it again. I don't want to ruin this guy's life. But my advice to him would be put your own little sign outside your house. Or if you want to stay home all day and like look for cars who might be parking there, just be honest and go, I would love it if you could leave me this spot. You don't have to, but it would make me so happy. And you'd be surprised. People go, oh, okay, I want to make you happy. And then everyone's happy and no one is a Jobsworth or a liar. Okay, very quickly, we have a message from my good friend, Andrew Johnston, comedian, producer of this podcast, the man who keeps us up to date on all things celebrity pop culture. This is in response to last week's episode, P, did he? Andrew says, P, he did. Or at least all signs are pointing toward the walls closing in on the hip-hop mogul and rumored human-slash-drug trafficker, Sean Puff, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Diddy, Brother Love, Combs, is at the center of an absolute PR and legal shitstorm, bringing to memory the heyday of OJ. But is this all much to do about nothing? Agents from America's Homeland Security Department raided Diddy's homes in Los Angeles and Miami last week with the images of several people, including his adult sons, being forcibly escorted out along with the seizure of all sorts of Diddy's personal effects, painting a very damning picture in the collective imagination of the internet. Flight trackers noting his private jet frenzied bouncing around airports in Southern California before heading to Cape Verde, where it was ultimately grounded, combined with Antigua not having an extradition treaty in the U.S., and footage of Diddy wandering around a private airport in Miami led everyone to believe that we might see a perp walk for Easter. But the timing of Diddy's Caribbean trip was a pre-planned spring break for Combs and his teenage twin daughters. And apparently the jet was grounded in Antigua because that's where they could get parking real estate. Anyone with a private jet can tell you, parking is really a nightmare. Try it in the small suburbs of the UK. The only arrest that's been made is of a 25-year-old named Brendan Paul, who was busted with cocaine possession while attempting to board a private jet with Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever you want to call him, and had been named in music producer Rodney Lil Rod Jones' lawsuit as Diddy's mule, tasked with procuring drugs, guns, and brokering price points with sex workers. What a talented triple threat he is. So this does appear to check out. Another drug mule named in Jones' lawsuit is ex-girlfriend of Diddy and current City Girl rapper Young Miami, who allegedly carried pink cocaine, aka Tussie, which is seemingly cocaine in a cuter outfit mixed with ketamine, MDMA, or opioids. That has really made us feel out of touch with the party scene, Andrew and me, because we are not doing this shit. Probably because we don't want to fucking die. Let that be a lesson to the kids out there listening. Never carry someone else's drugs. Being a mule is never cool. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. Two women have been named as being on Diddy's monthly payroll for sex work. Instagram influencer and certified wellness coach, which, yeah, I guess that description works, Jade Ramsey, and she's denied this because I follow her due to her incredible body, 50 Cent's baby's mother, Daphne Joy. It is sad if true, but her being named in the suit has led 50 to initiate sole custody proceedings for their 12-year-old son. I don't think that 50 Cent has been a very nice man historically to women. I really hated when he had that conflict with Rick Ross and maliciously leaked sex videos of Rick Ross and a former girlfriend, like to get back at Rick Ross, but in the fracas of it all, like really exploited the woman featured in these sex tapes. 50 then declared bankruptcy so he wouldn't have to pay this woman. I've talked about it before, but he just rubs me the wrong way. And like, all right, if someone is a sex worker, that doesn't give you right to take custody of the son. If they're around drugs and ketamine and whatever, you know, it's bad. A 12-year-old definitely shouldn't be anywhere near P. Diddy, his entourage, his drugs, his private jets. So there's just cause for that. But I mean, Yeah, 50 Cent has been very vocal on social media about the whole thing, if you would like to be entertained by that. At least 4 Jane Does and 1 John Doe have been interviewed by New York prosecutors in connection to sex trafficking allegations and a RICO, that's racketeer-influenced and corrupt organizations, case. Another salacious detail unearthed from the lawsuit alleges Diddy's chief of staff, Christina Coram, described as the Ghislaine Maxwell to his Jeffrey Epstein, quote-unquote required Combs domestic employees to carry a fanny pack filled with cocaine, GHB, ecstasy, and more for the rapper to indulge in his drug of choice at his command. It's worth noting the deafening sound of exactly no one coming to Diddy's defense ever since the suit was filed by Cassie. Even Kanye West refused to see him recently after Diddy caught his set at Rolling Loud. The closest vote of moral support came from Marion Suge Knight, who weighed in from behind bars. Well, I mean, that's a great character witness. Like, it's me, Suge Knight, from jail where I belong, letting you all know that Puff Daddy's a great guy. He weighed in from behind bars telling Diddy that his life is in danger. They're going to get you if they can. And also, do not do your time going by Brother Love. Brother Love is not a good code name for prison. It's also worth noting that Diddy's current legal rep is Sean Hawley, an infamous criminal defense attorney who cut her teeth as part of OJ's team and since represented Lindsay Lohan, Michael Jackson, Paris Hilton, Justin Bieber, the Kardashians, and many, many more. So more news is yet to come. We have our eyes on this story. It's such a drama. It's really bad. And clips and snippets from the past are resurfacing, portraying Combs as hiding in plain sight for years. From Usher recounting his teenage years spent living with Diddy, walking into rooms and seeing orgies unfolding, to an Insta Live in which basketball god LeBron James paraphrases S Club 7 saying, "Ain't no party like a Diddy party," and all the loaded meanings that that could contain. CEO of Universal Music Group Lucian Grange, the most powerful man in music, quote-unquote, was named as an accomplice in the Diddy Combs sex trafficking lawsuit for alleged claims, aiding, abetting, and inducing Puffy to run a sex trafficking ring. You better believe every photo of this guy and Taylor Swift ever taken is getting on a lot of sites this week as conspiracy theorists bay at the moon like wolves. Although Prince Harry was named in passing in Jones' lawsuit as an example of famous people Diddy would associate with, the British press has glommed onto it, running a 17-year-old photo of the two with Prince William conveniently cropped out. We can only assume even Diddy found hanging out with Prince Andrew a bridge too far. There is so much more to come in this ever-developing story, and I await it with bated breath. If you have any inside knowledge on the unfoldings of the P. Diddy case or anything we've talked about today, any questions, medical questions, sexual questions that are none of our business, but we answer them anyway, about the conjoined twins story, you could probably ask them yourself. They're very open on social media and you can follow them. I think they're called Two Heads Are Better, which is funny. They're funny girls. Now, before we get to your letters, your dilemmas, your queries, your questions, and your advice for other listeners, let's listen to some brief messages from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, Let's begin with the many reactions you had to last week's podcast. You have advice for listeners. As always, I appreciate that so much. Oh no, yes, this is very predictable. Catherine, choosing projects, working in Dubai. I'm going to read this, even though I assume it's negative, about my choice to do a show in Dubai next Friday. Is it next Friday, April 12th? It's a wonderful early show at 6:30 p.m., which is very exciting. You can still have your evening out. You'll be out of there, I'm assuming, by 8. It's going to be great. It's my first ever stand-up comedy show that I'm doing in Dubai. It might be my last. I think there are tickets still available. It's at the Dubai Opera. I know what this letter is going to say, but I'm going to read it anyway. It says, Catherine, I just listened to the latest episode and my heart sank a little when I heard Dubai listed as a tour date, as it does when any comedian or podcast announces they will be performing there. I don't think I need to explain why. Later in the episode, you joked that perhaps booking a gig in Dubai is the reason you hadn't been invited to host Drag Race earlier, so I'm guessing this is a booking you weighed up on before deciding to go for it. I'd be really interested in you shedding some light on why so many artists and entertainers who are otherwise supportive allies to the LGBT community decide to take bookings in Dubai. I'm guessing the money's great, but I'm wondering if there are other reasons. The money is not a factor, really. I love money, but it wasn't more money than I would get to perform anywhere else, considering I have to fly somewhere, be away from my kids, book a hotel, stay two nights and come back. That's something that, I don't have the lifestyle where I'm like, yeah, it's a trip. It's hard for me. And I considered bringing the whole family, but that was going to be wild. It's too hot there right now. No, it wasn't about the money. It's about the fact that if I stop performing in countries where I have some political disagreements with how they operate, then very soon I'm not going to be performing anywhere. I have huge issues with the politics of this country. I have big issues with American politics. I don't even think Canadian politics have always been on the up and up. So I feel like my job is to be an entertainer for people who live wherever they want me to come and see them. And there are wonderful people in Dubai who will be LGBTQAI plus allies like I am. I know that they have some tricky political misgivings that aren't completely in line with mine, but that's true of people and places, and it's going to be true all the time. And I feel like I largely, I'm not going to blacklist an entire place or assume that everyone who lives there shares the same views. That's how I feel about that. And I mean, that might not be an answer that you like, but I've had shows before. I had a show at the Palladium that was very, very generously supported by the London Gay Men's Chorus. They are my favorite choir. They're so talented, really funny. They add a real element of camp and just, I don't even know what to call it. They do something special that's all their own, and I love them. And when they open for me, it's an event, and I hope to have them open for me at the Palladium when I'm there with this tour. And there was a man in the audience who had come with his girlfriend or wife, whatever, they were in a romantic relationship, judging by their body language. And he had kind of had his arms crossed and was rolling his eyes at me the whole time. Like, he's not a feminist, I could see from his reaction to a lot of the stuff that I was saying. I ignored it. And then I said, is everyone excited for the London Gay Men's Chorus? And he went, no. And I just thought, okay, you can pick him out. I think I said something to him. I think I just addressed his girlfriend. I was like, blink if you're in trouble. We'll get you out of here. Like, he's an asshole. Basically, it was years ago. I'm not sure exactly how I communicated it. I didn't make a huge thing of it. But like, there are people in every show that I have who might be racist, who might be homophobic, who are dragged by their partners, but who are misogynists, who hate me, what I'm about. And all women, you know what I mean? But I'll still take their money and let them buy a ticket. I don't think it's for me to decide. There will be people who are really disappointed with my choice to do a show in Dubai. And we can agree to disagree. All right, here's a reply to the listener who wasn't sure whether she should approach this woman she admired about having known her deceased brother. Catherine, last week you were responding to a listener who realized their son's teacher is someone she knew from a funeral. You mentioned talking about loved ones can be really helpful, and I absolutely agree. In 2018, I lost my only child to SIDS. I'm so sorry. When given the opportunity to talk about her, it makes my day. I don't always get to feel like a mom, but I do feel like one when I get the chance to speak about her or if someone asks her name. Little things, and it doesn't happen often, but when it does, I glow talking about her. There's something about social norms that keep people from having awkward or difficult conversations. I agree with you, and I think the caller in the right environment should say how she feels. That's a beautiful gift for someone mourning. I also think that it's just a rare, intimate interaction to have, and those really nice moments are beautiful for everyone involved. Anyway, thank you for always stating your opinion and giving me a good laugh. My God, I'm so sorry about what happened. What an absolute nightmare. It's every parent's nightmare. And of course, you are still a mom, and your child is here. She's just here in a different way. And I know people who've lost kids. And luckily, I've learned from them that, yeah, people want you to ask about people's lost, you know, and again, lost isn't the word that everybody likes to use. I have a friend who says he died. He died. They don't want to act like passed or like he's somewhere, like he died. Your child, you know, will always be in your universe in some way. And I believe that you will meet them again. And I don't know how I would ever deal with that in my own life. But I think that I've learned from my friends. And I would want someone to ask about my child too, as though they were here, because they are, but in a different sense. So thank you for sharing that. New letters from this week. Catherine, would I be the asshole for withholding wedding photos that were meant to be free? Here's the backstory. My best friend of over 25 years got married last November. She is a conjoined twin. No. I planned the bridal shower because she lost her mother the summer we were going into high school. So my mother and I spent over $2,500, this is an American or Canadian or Australian listener, on a bridal shower. This was followed by a bachelorette to Disney and the actual wedding in Mexico. So the costs as a bridesmaid have added up tremendously. I'm a professional wedding photographer, and this is what I do for a living, so I shot her wedding for free. This is about $5,000 value. There was a lot of drama leading up to the wedding with the other bridesmaid, and I tried to keep my cool. Fast forward to the last day of the four-day weekend we spent in Mexico for the wedding. I admittedly got a little too drunk, which is something that's very uncharacteristic of me. I lost all inhibitions, and I said things to the other bridesmaid and her husband and basically made a fool of myself. I've since apologized, but for me and my best friend, we've not spoken except once post-wedding. We spoke, and on that phone call, she told me that the other bridesmaids told her things that were I surely didn't say. Oh, I see. She said that I told her, but you don't really remember because you were drunk. She said I told her that her fiancé, now husband, beats her, which I've never said ever, and my best friend chose to believe this woman, and we haven't spoken since, and we'll probably never speak again. Now to my question. I obviously have her wedding photos. My question to you is, should I send an email stating that if she wants these photos, the dollar amount is XYZ, or that I'm happy to delete them? I understand that money's not everything, but I'm a single woman running my own small business, and she has way more money than I do, and I've wasted over $13,000 this last year on nothing. After seeing how easily persuaded she is and how little she thinks of me to believe such nonsense, I really don't have any desire to continue being her friend. It's sad, and obviously over the last few months I miss her occasionally, but not quite as much as I would have thought. Please let me know if you think it's worth asking her to pay for the photos, or if I should not contact her unless she contacts me about the photos. Thank you for your time. Oh my God. And then she said, no need to keep me anonymous. Let that bitch hear it. Well, girl, hang on. You got really, really drunk and made a fool of yourself. You said things to the other bridesmaid and her husband. So is it possible that you don't remember everything you said to the bridesmaid and her husband? If you got super wasted and you've made a fool of yourself, you might just remember some of the things you said. And you don't think you would have said that your best friend's husband is abusive. But Lord knows, like, how you said it, or you thought it was a joke. Like, you'd be surprised the stupid shit that you say when you're drunk. You need to go online and watch this video of Reese Witherspoon. And I don't mean to, you know, this is a terrible event for her that I'm sure she doesn't want rehashed. But I mean, and it's not funny, but it is funny in a way. So first of all, drunk driving is not funny. You can kill someone and kill yourself. It's really bad. But she was drinking and driving, unfortunately, and she got pulled over. And she started, or was her husband driving? No, I think she was driving. I don't know. Maybe she wasn't drinking and driving, but she was definitely drunk and she was definitely in the car. Her husband might have been the one driving. Anyway, the dash cam footage captures the police officer speaking to her and being like, "Are you drunk?" And she goes, "Sir, how dare you? I'm not drunk. I'm pregnant." Like, she really doubles down on, like, how could I be drunk? I am pregnant. And she wasn't pregnant. She was lying. And she said, like, "Don't you know who I am?" Like, she did the whole awful, embarrassing thing that you might do when you're drunk. Because that's why you never let yourself get out of control like that. Because everyone is an asshole when they're drunk. And everyone lies when they're drunk. And the biggest lie you tell yourself is, "I'm not really that drunk." And that's how people drive. So as soon as you start drinking, make sure your keys are nowhere where you can convince yourself you're sober and use them to take another life. But I loved her admission afterwards. She was like, "Yeah, I did say that. That was fucked up to say. I was wasted." And I can see that I am someone who would do the same thing. I'd be like, "How dare you? I'm pregnant." Like, I would tell outlandish lies if I was really drunk. I know I would. And this has just happened in November. It's not that long ago, but you still feel hurt and embarrassed. And yeah, you're like, how could my best friend of 25 years, after everything I've done for her, believe this other bridesmaid who hates me? I think you need to consider that you might have said some left side shit that you don't remember. And I also think that you need to go back to the place of love for this woman that made you pay for the bridal shower and the wedding and all these things in the first place. When you give someone a gift or you contribute to their happiness out of goodwill and charity, you don't expect to get anything back. And I know that now you're mad and you feel like she's been a bad friend, but you can't rewrite history. You can't go back to the money and be like, "I made those offers on the contingency that we would still be friends." There was no contingency when you made those offers. You know what I mean? You said, "I will photograph your wedding for free." And you did that as a friend at the time. "And I will pay to go to Mexico for your wedding. And I will pay for your bridal shower." And you did those things from a place of goodness and generosity. And you should stand by your own character. You know, like, that's why I did it. And you should just give her wedding photos and be like, "I'm very hurt that you believe someone else over me, even though I was completely wasted and I might have said exactly what she told you." I would just say, "I'm so sorry. I have absolutely no recollection of saying those things to her. I believe that I'm being framed, but look, I was wasted and I never should have been wasted. So I apologize for that. I don't know if you've been in a position, best friend, bride, where you have been so wasted, but I sincerely hope you never get in that position because I was embarrassing myself. So I apologize for that. But I was so caught up in the moment of being in Mexico and being with you. Anyway, here are your photos as promised. I'm so sorry about how things have ended as well. And I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me." You know what I mean? Like, go out on a high. Be the good person because you'll never regret that. You can make more money, but you can't get back behavior that you regret, you know? And like, just go out classy. Whether you said it or not, just do the right thing. Always do the right thing and karma will repay you. That's exactly what I would do. But then, like, I have loads of money, so I would, but that's not, I've always been generous with money. And like, I've always been very principled. And I think that the more generous you can be, then wonderful things will come to you like they've come to me. I've always lived my life from that place. And you probably did say that. Okay. What? Why is Joanne sending me this? Get verified on TikTok. A scam email you received. Why is Joanne sending me a scam email? I think she wants me to warn you guys. If you get an email that says, "Congratulations, you're eligible to get a blue verification badge next to your TikTok account. Please reply with your account name, take a screenshot of your account, attach your national ID card or passport and phone numbers. And then the support team will get back to you." I mean, whatever. Okay, Joanne. "Now, should I have a baby and split custody with my gay friend who would also be the biological dad?" Yes, you should. Let's see. "I might pursue a family building with a queer man, meaning I would be the mother and carry the child if my body goes along with that plan. Besides all the fear that comes with committing to that and the sadness of possibly having to let go from having a child with a romantic partner as a cis hetero woman, I see so much benefit in co-parenting, and I see it as a step toward freedom and equality, single momming being one of the biggest poverty traps. Oh, yeah, co-parenting in every sense. So you mean your gay man friend would biologically be the dad, but he'd also be very present as a father figure in your child's life, and he would financially contribute. My question is, while I think shared custody 50-50 is fair on both sides and will benefit me as a woman with a career, and it will be so good for the child, I also feel like it should be more 55-45 in favor of the one who carried the child, gave birth to it, gave her body to that child for many months after giving birth. It's scary to let go of that control as a woman, and somehow I paranoidly feel like as a woman I have to protect myself. He will be so dedicated and a great father, but somehow I feel like the role and especially the rights of the mother are still an ounce more important and should be protected. We'll come up with a family contract if we were to procreate together, which is mostly a family agreement, non-binding. I want to be honest about my thoughts, but am I being unreasonable and controlling? I mean, I would not look. Listen, you're talking about a child that doesn't exist. When I was deciding that I wanted to grow my family and have Fred and have Fenna, I thought that I could have Bobby look after them and pay a babysitter to look after them and just live my life and continue with my career and sort of be a dad, quote unquote. Sorry, that offends a lot of people. Exactly three stay-at-home dads who listen to this podcast. But you know what I mean? Like, dads who are being honest with themselves know what I mean. Your body doesn't change. Your career remains paramount. Yes, you make a few sacrifices, but early days especially, you don't make anywhere near the same sacrifices as the mom in most cases. So when the children were born, when I met Fred, like instantly I was like, oh, I have to look after this baby. I have to be the one who does it. And I loved him and I didn't want to just go off and do my own thing. And I brought him on tour and all the rest is history. But I think it's very normal to feel territorial as a mom and protective as a mom, but you're talking about a lot of unknowns. The reality is when you make this decision, there will be so many variables that you couldn't draw up a contract for or like predict. I agree that you should have a contract just, you know, because you both will legally, if you're on the birth register, you will both have parental responsibility for the child. And that means you will need him to weigh in on decisions about schools and everything else and like medical agreements. Like, have you had big discussions about what you would do in certain medical settings or like what you would want in terms of, I don't know, school and travel? Like, you have to have all these chats because they will be legally half his decision regardless. Like, I don't think you can change it to 55-45. I think parental responsibility is 50-50. You have some say over how much time the child spends where. I don't know that it gay. I mean, and again, I love the gay community. I don't know that most gay men that I know would want 50% of a child living with them, like all that time. They're busy. They have careers too. And they're fun and they have social lives. And guess what? You can't really have that with a child. I love where your head's at. I think it's very progressive. I think it's going to be messy no matter what. And it doesn't mean that you can't have a baby with a romantic partner down the road. So if you are really sure that this man is someone who you want to be in your child's life forever and your life basically forever, and you think that he is of sound body and mind and is going to make smart decisions about your child and is a good biological candidate and will be a good father figure, then by all means, go for it. And you're not being controlling, but it's very normal to be protective. You haven't really told us how he feels about this arrangement. Why don't you like go in 60-40 and see if he'll agree to it? And then both of you just be prepared to change your minds once the baby arrives. It could get very messy like it often does. It's so tricky because this child doesn't really belong to either of you. It's its own person with its own destiny and it will be in your life for a short period of time and then it will go and do what it wants. So when you think about it that way, just try to keep your child's interests paramount. And then if it all works out, it's great. You get loads of time to yourself and a nice break. Catherine, I, a vanilla, tried to be a bit kinky and he loved it. Now what? You have gotten me into a situation I did not expect. Some background for you. I've been exploring my intimacy issues in therapy recently, and that has uncovered some deep-rooted abandonment issues I didn't know I had. I've also really fallen out of love with my body since gaining so much weight, and that's been another great excuse for me to avoid intimacy and being naked with my husband. My husband's love language is physical, not always sexual touch, so this has had us between a rock and a hard place. As I pull away, he tries to get closer, both physically and emotionally. We're doing the work to address our other issues separately in therapy, and I'm happy to say that this has been successful so far. I listened, oh no, I was going through something when I visited Shadera Igaru, the Slum Flower. If you don't listen to the Slum Flower podcast, you have to. But I did an episode on there where I was like, I don't know where I got it from. Like, I go on these tangents once in a while, and Bobby just tolerates them. He's like, all right, you let me know when you're at the end of this thing, what you come up with. That I was like, I think maybe I should be a dominatrix. I think that's what people expect from me. And being a nice girl is boring. And your husband doesn't actually want a good wife and mother. He wants like a bit of a mess who's also like a dominatrix. Oh no. So you caught me at my like lowest point. One of my many hypotheses. And you tried it out in your own marriage, didn't you? I listened to your conversation with the Slum Flower on her podcast. I've been listening to both of your podcasts for a while now. I'd had a cocktail or two. I was in my sexy lingerie and I was feeling unusually good about my body for a hot minute. I tentatively called my husband a good boy and he loved it. He loved it. Ever since, he occasionally messages me in the day saying he's thinking about that night and how great it was. And I guess you're thinking, well, what's the problem here? Well, I don't know where to take it next. I definitely don't want to take this to any extremes, but now a discussion about fantasy and role play has been brought to me by my husband, and I'm up for it. We're married, and I love my man, so it feels okay to explore this side of our relationship, but I really don't know where to begin. I feel like something has been unlocked in him, and I want to be part of that in a healthy way. Please help. He's not looking for me to don a gimp mask or anything, or walk my high heels across his back, or whip him. I absolutely want to keep it subtle and classy, but what's my next move? This is pretty much out of my comfort zone. Body image and abandonment issues do not help here either. Any suggestions? Oh my God. I don't want this for you because I don't want it for myself. I haven't tried any of this dominatrix stuff. Shadera is the person to ask. If you reach out to her, I'm sure she'll get back to you. But I think that... See, this is why I got into like exploring it in my own mind. I didn't do it in my actual bedroom like you did, but yeah, I think that if you've awakened something in him where he likes to be dominated a little bit and he finds it exciting, then you should follow through on it as much as you feel comfortable with, because I wouldn't want him to go, not saying that he should or that he would, but I would then be like, oh God, I don't want him out in the world seeking a dominatrix out, because very normal, regular guys, family men, dads, they do shit you wouldn't believe. They're in gay relationships. I hear from my gay friends that they'll like see people at the soft play who they also saw at an orgy the night before. And I hear from dominatrixes all the time that married men come in and they just want to be like shouted at and called a loser. Or they want to be pegged. Pegging is a bridge too far, probably for you and probably for me. Definitely for me. But I think a lot of guys like it. And the psychology behind it, I think, is that it's a lot of work to be a man all the time. And toxic masculinity, you know, when we talk about that, we're not trying to stop men from being men or whatever that means. But it's like there's a toxic element of that where they have to be working hard and making decisions and earning money and being the boss and being strong and being fast and never being vulnerable. And I think a dominatrix setting allows them to take a back seat and to be told what to do. So I think what you might be comfortable with, and again, I don't know anything about this. I've visited some fin doms. I've visited some doms like for an interview, but that's all I know. But I think you can start just ordering him around and telling him he's a good boy. He liked that. Shadera said like, even when she's out for a drink, she'll kind of test the waters. And if a guy like brings her a drink, she's on a date, and he'll order for her and she'll be like, oh, you're a good boy, or she'll use it then. I don't know if I would even feel comfortable about that. But I think just order him around a bit, even in domestic life. just make him honey-do lists. Like, please fix the garage door. Please check the engine light. Like, fill my car with gas. But do it in a bit of a bossy way. And then when he does it, be like, oh, you made me so happy when you did that. You're such a good boy, aren't you? Like, making me so proud. I should try that. Get fucking gas in my tank. Which Bobby did once last week. But I've done, like, the last four times. It's the only thing I ask for. But, like, I think give him praise when he does what you want. But order him around and don't feel like you have to apologize for ordering him around. Do you know what I mean? You can do it in an assertive way. And then in the bedroom, I don't really know what you could do. I really think, and I've said this on the podcast before, I do think that rimming has become mainstream. And I think that our husbands, mine included, but I just can't tell and I don't want to ask because I don't want to do it. But I think that they expect us to be licking their asshole. And you would not believe the vanilla women that I have mentioned this to in passing, and you would never think that, you know, they are like Linda from the bake sale, will be like, of course I lick my husband's asshole. I lick inside of it too. And I'm like, what? What? This is probably more easily done in the gay community because they like wax. And I think straight men have very poor hygiene probably. I don't know. Look, I'm going down a road that I know little about and I'm trying to wrap this up. So Andrew Johnston, producer of this podcast, expert in the field of rimming, please tell us, Andrew, for next week. And anyone else who has any advice, write me an email, tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. Chidera, if you're listening from the Slum Flower podcast, you let us know. What are we supposed to do in a vanilla way to like feed this little dominatrix thing? Which, by the way, I don't think Bobby's interested in at all, but your husband is. And that's cool. Andrew, have you ever encountered like straight, married, I use straight with, you know, quotations, men who like are in gay communities sometimes? And what are they looking for? And do you have any expertise in the field of like dom stuff? And I just mean from a perspective, it doesn't mean your husband's gay at all. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like, if you spend your life as a top, it's relaxing sometimes to be the bottom. I get that as a top. Thank you so much for listening. Write us email. We need help on this subject. Let's do like a whole not suitable for your children to listen to on the school run in the car episode next week. Write me an email, tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. I'm sorry if I offended the parking guy. It's not only you. It's a nationwide problem. Please come to see me in Dubai April 12th if you agree with or don't agree with their politics. If you happen to be in the area, you know what I mean? I'm on tour from the autumn. There are loads of tickets sold out. Like there are venues you just can't come to anymore. And that surprises me. But thank you for buying tickets, booking tickets, gifting people tickets for Easter. If you would like to see if there are tickets near you, you can check livenation.co.uk or Live Nation Europe or Ireland, if that's where you want to go. My book, The Audacity, is always available. But mostly, I'm just grateful that you listen to this podcast for free. See you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.